Session number 13577, reel number 2.
Mr. Weinmark, reel 2.
If the tube had been broken by the shrapnel, I wouldn't be speaking to you today. Sergeant Saget's name is on the, unfortunately, on the 617 Dambusters Memorial at Woodhall Spa. He was there as a squadron leader with the DFC. That would have been sort of 3 or 4 years after this.
So this was the autumn of 1941 when you had the raid on Hamburg.
Yes, that was autumn 41. Sergeant Saget, of course, was a Canadian. I go regularly to Woodhall Spa and pay my respects to him. After that, I was sent to 104 Squadron. That's a few miles away from Driffield, Pocklington at Driffield. And I was detailed to fly with a crew I never met before, and they never met me, so they didn't know if I was good, bad, or indifferent. Anyway, we were detailed to fly to Malta as a squadron. A whole squadron flew across. We took the ground crew, all the gear needed for the ground crew, overload tanks, because we were going to fly straight across France into Malta. That was an 8-hour trip.
What planes did you have? Still Wellingtons?
That was still Wellingtons, yes. Yes, yes. That was still 41. The Lancasters weren't flying by then. Or I think some of the Halifaxes were about. That's either Halifaxes Stirlings, I'm not sure. No, Wellington's carried on for some time after this. Anyway, I flew with Sergeant Scotty Huggins, with a flying officer, Scotty Huggins. He was quite an experienced flyer. His regular navigator had broken his legs. That's why I was given him. He didn't know me from Adam. Anyway, we set off with the crew. And it was a bit tough on them, the ground crew, because they're not very comfortable in the back of the Wellingtons, had to sit where they could sit, and it was an 8-hour flight. Anyway, Scotty called me to the cockpit on ETA, that's the estimated time of arrival at Malta. And there, in front of us, was Malta shining like a jewel in the Mediterranean, in the sun, in the early morning sunshine. We'd done about 20 operations with Scotty and I, and one very successful trip was four aircraft were detailed. The CO came and us, two other aircraft, and Scotty. We were detailed to bomb two ships heading for Benghazi, for Rommel's forces in Benghazi. And this was found by a Wellington aircraft known as the Flying Bedstead. It was the first start of radar. It was called an ASV, which air-to-surface radar. They could send out their signal and pick up a ship some miles away from them on their radar, very much the same as the anti-aircraft gunners picked up aircraft flying in this sort of reversed the system. Anyway, this ASV aircraft found the convoy all right, and we were detailed to fly to a point in the Mediterranean, and the ASV would send us back the the position of the ships, and he would on our ETA at that at the ships, he would start dropping flares over the ship. Well, that went on very nicely. We found the ships all right, and we each aircraft dropped four sticks of 250-pound bombs across these two ships. We were told not to attack the Italian destroyer. The ships had Bofors guns on their stern, which were firing at us. We were bombing at about 4,000 feet. I don't think the Italian destroyer knew what to do. He didn't seem to be bothered. Eventually cleared off, I think. Anyway, my bombs, the last stick of my bombs was across the stern of the ship, and the Bofors gun stopped firing immediately, so I knew I'd got a fairly good hit on that. And the next day, the photographic aircraft, which was usually a Spitfire or a Hurricane, was sent out to see if we could find the ships, and they couldn't. They were assumed that the two ships were sunk. The CO got the DSO, and Scotty got the DFC. Is that?
Where did you fly from in Malta?
From Lucca Airfield. It's now the passenger airfield of. There were two other airfields run by the naval aircraft, but they were really too small for our Wellingtons. We'd done several operational flights. Always, there were several to Naples. I know we had to bomb Brindisi once. There was a aircraft factory at Brindisi. I know we set that alight. And also, we done long trips to Benghazi. It was a long trip from Malta, Benghazi, bombing the harbour in Benghazi. And also in Tripoli, which was only a short trip from Malta. And the Castel Benito airfield, which was, I suppose, about 10 miles south of Tripoli. Anyway, eventually we'd spent about 4 months on Malta as a squadron. We never lost a man. We lost a lot of aircraft to bombing from the Junkers 88s bombing us because they didn't like us bombing them. And eventually we had to leave Malta because it was becoming impossible. They were getting very accurate with their bombing and destroying all their aircraft.
About what proportion of your attacks were on convoys?
Oh, that was the only one that I know of on a convoy. The Navy done most of their convoy with swordfish and torpedo bombing. It was the time of the Taranto raid, which was quite largely...
How successful do you think your operations were?
Oh, very good. Very, very successful. We could see at night, you see. We could see well. The air is very clear there. There was hardly ever any cloud. I do remember one night coming back from Naples. We had to fly directly over Sicily to get to Naples, and of course Mount Etna is 10,000 feet, and we were running into, this was in the winter time, we were running into ice, and went down and down and down to get out of the ice, and the pilot was having to use his controls the whole time and keep, so it was a bit bumpy, because if he didn't use his controls they would ice up. Anyway, we eventually got low enough, so about 2,000 feet, and of course we couldn't cross Sicily then, so we had to go right the way around Sicily, and come in from the west. We had on our aircraft, we had what was called IFF, Identification Friend or Foe, which was a radar signal sent, which the ground radar at Malta could pick up. But the Maltese gunners were a bit trigger happy, that's the answer, that's the one. And therefore, we devised a system that on approaching Malta on the way back, we would fly 120 degrees one way and 120 degrees back the other, which virtually sent to the signal to the radar people that we were stationary. Just for 1 minute, done that for 1 minute, and that worked very well as a sort of double identification. When we got, eventually had to go back to Egypt. Scotty and I were the last of the crews to go. We were about 10 days behind. Our own aircraft we flew in had been fired by bombing, and we had to wait for an aircraft to be put together from bits and pieces of other aircraft. The ground crews were marvellous at that sort of thing. And we eventually got permission to take off, and we were sent to a landing ground in Egypt, about 10 miles to the west of Cairo.
Before we go on to Egypt, can you say something about living conditions in Malta under the siege?
Terrible, as far as the population was concerned. The Maltese, well, in fact, the contractor who took away the swill from the various messes would sell it to the Maltese for a penny a handful. They were in very, and of course, they had stored a lot of grain in the caves underneath Malta. There's a lot of caves in Malta, and a lot of it went rotten. So they were in desperate states. They were being fed by anything that could get into Malta. There was two very high-speed merchant ships which plied from Alexandria to Malta, and they would come in late in the evening, early in the evening, and leave before dawn back to Malta. They would sort of super effort on behalf of the stevedores to get this out. They carried bombs, food, anything that was wanted. And those two aircraft ran for about a year on this very fast run. That was the saviour of, as far as Malta was concerned. Yes, they were in terrible plight, and they were right to get the George Cross.
What about your own living conditions?
I spent most of my time on a straw palliasse in the electric station, which was in a cave underneath the airfield. We just slept where it was safe. And that was the case, whatever rank you were. I can remember one day coming out of the airfield, the air raid siren went and up rolled a staff car, and out came the officer in charge in the staff car alongside me as a poor sergeant, and there was his scrambled egg hat in front of me on the floor. It was the AOC mortar. So Sir Hugh Lloyd.
Hugh Lloyd.
Yeah, that's right. And he was a marvellous chap, of course. And we picked ourselves up. I dusted him myself down. He dusted himself up. I handed him his hat, and off he went again. But that was the sort of thing we had to put up with on water.
Why was he so marvellous?
Oh, he had something about him which I don't know. Everyone respected. Of course, he had supreme power. He had power of life and death.
Did your health suffer in Malta?
No, not at all. No, I think we had too much to do to worry about ourselves. And after all, if you sit still long enough, you soon feel ill.
Which operations did you prefer, on North Africa or on Italy?
North Africa. Didn't really like bombing the Italians, because they were, to some extent, friendly. And we tried not to bomb anything which was not a proper target.
What kind of targets did you have in North Africa?
Mainly the airports, the ports along the coast that were operated by Grommel, and odd things in the desert where they were concentrations of German targets. We also flew places like Crete. We had two or three raids in Crete. Some aircraft also dropped rifles and ammunition to the Yugoslavs from Malta. But a tour in Malta was rather elongated. We were based on the canals, on the Suez Canal at Cabrit. We had to bomb up there, then fly out to a landing ground. Ours was 109, out in the desert, in daylight, fill up with petrol, then go on and bomb our target, which was, I think, Benghazi was a favourite target, back to the landing ground at night, and then back home to Cabrit in the daylight again. So it means you've got a maximum of two raids a week, if you're lucky. I became tour expired in May of 1942. This was the tour expiring was an Air Ministry requirement that if you've done over 30 raids, you were due for a rest. I think it was the medical people was the people who really recommended this. I'd done nearly 40 raids by that time, because they seemed to forget that I'd done my bombing in over Germany. Anyway, I was given 7 days leave and flown up to Palestine. It's now Israel, of course. And the Cook's tour operators were still there, and they took us free of charge to the various religious sites in Jerusalem and Bethlehem, which was rather nice.
How did you like operating from Cabrit as opposed to Lucca?
Oh, it was much better because there were proper quarters at Cabrit and proper messes, reasonable food, although there was still 57 ways of cooking corned beef and onions. That was the main and stable diet. The bread wasn't very good. We preferred biscuits to that, dry biscuits. The bread was very, very poor.
What was the main opposition when you went on a raid in North Africa? Was it from
anti-aircraft? Yes, there weren't many German fighters in Egypt. Certainly no night fighters. No, it was really, it wasn't as bad as it was over Germany. But of course, Rommel had some first-class men there. They were very good at their anti-aircraft. They knew what they were doing.
Did you have any narrow escapes, or was the plane damaged?
No, I didn't. I remember one. Yes, I do remember one. We got a shell a bit close to us, and the front gunner sort of said, "One of my windows is smashed." And I was in the bombing bay at the time, and I got up to him and see if he was all right, and I picked a red hot piece of shrapnel off of the coat he was wearing. But that was as near as, no, if it had been any further, it would have killed him, of course. But no, there was no, we had very few casualties.
Did the German Air Force attack Cabrit Airfield?
Oh, occasionally, yes, but it was a long way for them. They usually come from Crete. That was their nearest point. Very rarely, and there was we had good
defences.
They were good defences, and of course we had the radar people could notify us in good time that they were coming.
Did they do any damage to Cabrit?
No. I think they gave it up as a dead loss. You can't bomb in on sand, and nothing happens. the bombs sort of bury themselves in the sand and don't do a lot of damage.
Did you have spare time in Cairo or Alexandria?
Yes, I went to Cairo two or three times. The only way we could get there was to hitch a lift on any service wagon that was going onto the Suez to Cabrit Road, which was a dead straight, Suez to Cairo Road, which was dead straight, and the same on the way back. The Church Army and the Salvation Army, they had a lot of hostels there, all very clean. We could stay two or three nights there.
What did you do whilst you were there?
Oh, we visit the museums, pyramids, and there's also a lot of tombs further to the south of the pyramids. Here again, the Cook's tour people were still there, and they took us on these tours.
What kind of a reception did you get from the Cairenes?
Oh, not very good. Not very good at all. Especially when Rommel was coming close.
What would they do?
Oh, they didn't do anything really, but they were obviously anti us.
Would they say things to you or spit?
Oh, yeah. There's some of the younger people would spit at it. Yes, they would. Yeah. But the Cairo police were very good at this sort of thing, and they would soon put that right. They weren't. They had sticks and truncheons. They soon clipped them round the ear. But of course, the thing was not to go to Cairo then.
Were you in Cairo when there was the trouble with King Farouk in February 1942?
Yes. Also, I went to a cinema in Cairo and saw Gone with the Wind.
Did you see anything of the trouble at Farouk's palace?
No, we never got anywhere near that. We were warned not to go near that sort of thing. Anyway, when I got back to Cabrit, we were told that 50 pilots, 50 navigators were to be sent to the USA to bring some aircraft back to England. We were to fly from Lagos across to America. Anyway, it didn't happen in the end. Eventually, we went on the Queen Mary. The Queen Mary had already brought up Australian troops, about 10,000 in the it carried, for the Alamein push. The usual thing, we didn't know what ship we were going on. We were sent to Suez. At that time of the year, that was in June, there were always heavy fogs at first thing in the morning, so you couldn't see across the harbour. And of course, the usual rumours went round, and someone said, "We're going on the Queen Mary." I said, "Don't be silly, the Queen Mary can't get up Suez." Sure enough, there it was. We got out in the tender boat, and there was this massive ship. And we got in the little side door of the Queen Mary, and off we went. Well, of course, when we got on board, we found 2,000 pounds of prisoners of war on board. They also had a guard of Polish boys. They were only boys. And we were immediately all armed with rifles or revolvers, because the Panzers, of course, were quite desperate sort of people. Anyway, off we went in the Queen Mary, called at Simonstown. There was no food left on board the Queen Mary other than bully beef and biscuits. At Simonstown we got some more supplies on board. From there, a very quick run to Rio de Janeiro. 3 days that took us. The Queen Mary went flat out, straight across. And there one or two of the German panzers tried to jump overboard. And they did jump overboard, but the Brazilian police brought them back. One or two of the Germans got injured by their Polish guard. But other than that, we went from Rio to New York. And before we got into New York, we stopped at Ellis Island, and the prisoners of war were taken off and put aboard the Ellis Island for their